Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
Here's Umberger moving up, pass to Cote, a shot, he scores! Riley Cote gets his first National Hockey League goal!
Riley Cote is a former professional ice hockey left winger who played four National Hockey League NHL seasons with the Philadelphia Flyers and was mainly known as an enforcer. Upon retiring from the Philadelphia Flyers, Riley founded the Hemp Heels Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization that promotes cannabis, hemp, as a viable renewable resource that can help increase the quality of lives of all people. Cote is a co-founder of Athletes for Care, a non-for-profit organization dedicated to creating a community where athletes can find support, opportunity, and purpose in life after a career in sports. Cote has launched a product line, Body Check Wellness, a line of hemp-based personal care products whose mission is to optimize everyday performance and challenge individuals to rethink the healing process. The line reinforces Cote's passion to help individuals discover non-toxic methods for pain management and self-healing. And without further ado, let's welcome Riley Cote. You've already been welcomed, so we obviously have to ask a very serious question to kick things off. Who was your favorite superhero growing up and why?
Wow. Right out of the gates, you're throwing the tough ones at me. You know what? I was a guy that really wasn't overly into superheroes, but if I had to pick one, Superman was definitely the one. And I think it's only because he's really the only guy that I really remember like watching, you know, and observing as a superhero. I know I knew of the Marvel comics and all these other superheroes and stuff, but I never really got into them. But Superman is probably everyone's, I mean, to some degree, but yeah, Superman, I definitely say Superman just because, I mean, there's no really need to go into detail. He was superhuman. I mean, yeah. He's saving lives, saving the city. looked like a professional, business professional.
Yeah, you know? Kind of like what you're doing right now, eh?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Christ, I dressed up as Superman when I was five. He was like back in the day. Well, I'm a few years older than you, so I remember I got pictures on the mantle, fucking, you know, thinking I was Superman for Christ's right. sakes. But anyways, so you've been very open about your cannabis use, not only today but in your playing days as well, to cope with pain. Now with legalization in Canada and many U.S. states, do you think it's been more accepted as a natural pain remedy opposed to pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, I think it's been coming for some time now. You know, I've been speaking about this for, say, almost 10 years, way before it was sexy to talk about it. You know, I was still getting some hairy eyeballs, when I was talking about it and being open about it, like, who's this guy? Why is he talking like this? But certainly now with, in the U.S., the U.S. Farm Bill that was passed in 2018 with opening up the can of worms for CBD products. So I think it just added another dimension, another layer to what cannabis is and how it can help people. So I think, talking about cannabis now isn't overly crazy. Cause I think a lot of people like non-cannabis users are now using cannabis products in some way, shape or form, but certainly still a lot of questions. There's still a lot of stigma around it because we still feel the need to, go like the traditional way of managing pain first. And then it's like, oh, okay, you know, cannabis is legal now, so let's explore that. But I feel like, I'd like to think in the next 5-10 years where people are actually looking at cannabis as the number one option, you know, not waiting for them to get dragged through the ringer and, you know, have all these adverse side effects and near death experiences before they start figuring this thing out. So obviously Canada's helped, with their legislation and legalization. I'm hopeful that the U.S. will deschedule or legalize whatever they land up doing. I'm hoping soon. So it just, again, it just adds that level of comfort for people that are not even on the fence, that are, you know, on one side of the fence, that would never even try it unless it was fully legal. So you still have a lot of people like that. So,
well, as you know, I mean, I'm from BC. It's like cannabis central, you know, so it's been part of our culture here for many years and very accepted. It's, you know, so the stigma, you know, surrounding it isn't, you know, there still is a little bit, but it's, you know, people are a lot more open to it, especially the CBD. You know, I take CBD daily. Actually, I haven't taken mine today. I got to take a couple drops right now. Take my full spectrum.
There you go. Yeah. It's interesting too. Like from my relationship with cannabis, has evolved so much too. You know, back in the day, there was really no understanding of CBD, right? There was just like a few different varieties. Like we were from Winnipeg and we get BC bud. It was like the, you know, the best bud, but we didn't have a name for the bud. We didn't know the cannabinoid profile of the bud, terpene profile. So you just took what you got, right? I mean, and it was good. It served its purpose. But now all of a sudden it's like, okay, got all these different varieties, high CBD varieties, you know, mid-grade, you know, higher terpene profiles. And also I find myself, you know, the evolution's kind of been from like these higher THC varieties where I don't, you know, necessarily consume a ton of THC anymore.
Me too.
I still enjoy some flower. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But you know, from the way I was smoking and consuming cannabis for years was essentially a misuse of the plant. You know, I was over, you know, I was over medicating probably most of the time. You know, I had some good times, some good laughs, and certainly helped me sleep in the whole bit. But again, with no real true education around it, you're on your own to kind of figure it out, right? I mean, that's what I'm trying to help with is kind of like for the younger generation is help, you know, create some guidance, you know, some sort of infrastructure of like respect and mindful cannabis use where it's not about absolutely getting rock stoned every time. You know what I mean? There's this other, you know, dimension, as I mentioned, where you can really tap into the plant and appreciate its healing properties without having to sacrifice productivity and all that stuff. So it's been interesting to see how this movement has evolved. But under, you know, the prohibition, the underground market was able to flourish, right? I mean,
I know all about that.
Actually, the THC, yeah, exactly. The THC was driven up through the cannabis prohibition, and the CBD was essentially driven out of the plant. Now we're finding ourselves kind of going backwards and finding more balanced cannabis products. So,
yeah, back in the day, it was singles, doubles, and triples. Now it's quads and all this. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just evolved so much. I was in California before this the whole C thing started, and I mean, the weed looked like it was from another planet, for crying out loud. It was, I mean, way ahead of even BC now. It's amazing. Oh, for sure. But and it's kind of cool how, like, you know, it's so accepted there, and it helps so many people. You know, for me, I mean, I suffer from insomnia, helps with my post concussions that I've gone through. Mm-hmm. And, just overall my creativity sparks even.
Oh yeah, no, just, for sure. That's a spiritual component that most people don't talk about is exactly that. And that's one of the spiritual pieces that, that aren't really talked about a whole lot, you know, that sense of connection and, you know, creativity. I think, you know, we become kind of, you know, one-dimensional beings. Like there's energy blockages, right? I mean, especially when you have substance abuse. I mean, alcohol is certainly a blockage of some sort, you know, to creativity, you know, especially when you're not feeling well. I think when you feel better, you're naturally more creative.
100%.
You know, it's interesting too, like California's had a medical program for close to 25 years, right? I mean, and the fact that the rest of the U.S., I mean, a good chunk of the rest of the U.S. is still, you know, their heads are in the sand. You know, the fact that for 25 years they've been using cannabis medically, and say quasi legally, and then there's still a good chunk of the population that can't wrap their head around that that cannabis has medicinal value. There's still people that argue that people use the term medical cannabis to backdoor recreational cannabis. You know,
and then you can use or abuse. It's that simple.
That's exactly it, right? So. And what I've learned too is like my own personal experience is that even though for say 15 years old was the first time I started smoking till the day I realized that cannabis was medicine, probably around the age of 27. So say, you know, 12 years of cannabis use and just no real true understanding of it. But every time I was using cannabis, there was a therapeutic component to it and a medicinal component to it. whether I knew it or not. That's why I was, you know, that's why my intuition was like leading me back to it. You know, it was making me feel good. It was making me sleep better. It was removing anxiety.
Yeah.
And now I know that it was helping, you know, with, the neuroprotectant properties, and it was helping me, you know, with performance anxiety and all these other things that I kind of made sense of after the fact. But, you know, imagine if we had a little bit of a manual, some sort of guidance with this plant when I was 15 years old, you know, I could have been, you know, let's say at least 12 years ahead of it, you know, instead of figuring this thing out on my own. And, you know, trials and tribulations too, right? I mean, you're self-exploring, and you're a lot of times you're mixing cannabis with alcohol and other party drugs. And so it's like, you're trying to make sense of what it is, but it's being misused the whole time, you know? And thank God I made out of that dark, you know, that darkness with some sort of intelligence around it. And, you know, and here we are.
Well, yeah, I know I've definitely had my own battles with, you know, I've been very open with my substance abuse that started, you know, really kicked in hard my first year away from home playing hockey, you know, just, you know, part of that culture, obviously, that, you know, it was just, you know, you're basically getting alcohol, you know, dumped down your throat, and just to fit in, you know, just really just, you know, just wanting to be loved and accepted. And, you know, anyways, so, you know, being an undrafted player that played in the NHL, let's hear about your journey that ultimately led you to achieving your dream.
Yeah, it was interesting to say the least. So not being drafted, 4 years in the Western League, my last 2 years, I put up some decent numbers, but nothing like in, you know, in the grand scheme of goal scorers and point producers, you know, I think between 50 and 55 points or so. So that was, you know, say average. I was like middle of the pack when you got guys putting up 90, 100 points. So I recognized that I wasn't as skilled as I thought I was when I was younger. You know, I mean, I was humbled in the Western Hockey, especially my first year. I only played, you know, 42 games. I was benched a lot. I was sitting on the fourth line. So immediately, you know, when I turned 16, I realized, I'm like, there's some really good hockey players out here. So, you know, that being said, they're in the Western Hockey League's pretty tough league. There's still a lot of fighting going on back then. And, you know, back when we actually read newspapers, if you remember the transactions in the sports page, you know, it's like guys getting called up. So looking at the guys getting called up, a lot of penalty minutes and a lot of points, and they're usually those guys, a lot of points were drafted. So I was like, shit, I'm gonna have to do this the old fashioned way, you know? And then I was a competitive guy, you know, back in the day there, it was kind of in my steroid usage days. So I was like, let's do it, you know, let's fight. Let's do this thing. So, you know, I lined up deciding to take on the role of being the fighter. You know, that summer I went to Toronto Maple Leafs training camp. I could have went back to the Prince Albert in the Western Hockey League for one more season, but that was when I went to Toronto Maple Leafs training camp is when I decided, I'm like, this is it. I'm taking on this role. I'm fighting everyone and their brother. And I don't care how many times I get beat up. I'm going to figure this thing out. So
who's your coach back? Was it Donnie Clark? Your coach back?
Yeah, then? I had Don Clark for 2 years. He was coach and GM.
Okay. He was my assistant coach in Tacoma, back in 92, 93, 93, 94.
Okay.
Tacoma Rockets. Yeah. So yeah, he's a pretty good guy. I know he's passed on now. So, you know,
yeah,
bless him.
Yeah. I just learned that recently. Yeah. Really? You know what? You know, knowing myself now, and me and him kind of butted heads a little bit where, you know, we had a really shitty team and I was like apparently the go-to guy in the Western Hockey League for points. And, you know, I remember him kind of ripping me a new asshole in front of the new team, you know, in front of the team and everything. And I was like,
I was scared to go to the dressing room because
I put together a better team than I don't know what you want from me. I'm like, you know, I'm not the go-to guy. You're making me be that. I was a captain of the team and the whole bit. So we didn't see eye to eye necessarily, but nothing but respect for him and his family. So it's unfortunate. I couldn't have resolved, you know, some of those, you know, just have that conversation later in life when you kind of mature and,
for sure,
get past all that, but that's life, I guess.
Yeah, no, literally, I was actually scared to walk into the dressing room because the looks that he would give me, and the other coach too, who I won't name, but whatever, you know, it's just all part of that culture back in the day.
Oh yeah, yeah, scaring the shit out of you, right? It's the old school way. Like, I was scared shitless, but you know, Kevin McClellan, I don't remember him.
Oh yeah,
four Stanley Cups, tough guy, but. You know, I'm a pretty, you know, pretty conservative guy. You know, my family's very religious, you know, coming out of Winnipeg and moving to Prince Albert and I'm dealing with a guy like Kevin. I love, and I know him personally now. So I love him for how he coached me now. I appreciate it more. But Like he would try to scare the shit out of me. I remember him calling me at the front of the bus on road trips when we pull over. He wanted a smoke break, and he would literally take his cigarette, flip it backwards, and swallow the goddamn thing and blow out the smoke and be like, I got the record at the bar, 13 cigarettes. Get to the back of the bus and just screw with you. You know what I mean? It was like, if the coach talked to you, usually it was like, it was bad. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, there's no sitting down with your players and showing them video and talking.
Actually being a real person and inspiring maybe through motivation, not intimidation.
Right. It's always intimidation back then. Yeah. The game's changed so much, man. Like the coaching styles and philosophy. No longer can you threaten guys and threaten to send them down and threaten their careers like they used to back in the day. There's so much more professionalism and intelligence behind the coaching philosophies now. So,
yeah. So, so for anyone that followed your career, you were personified as a tough guy. How did you prepare for each game, knowing that there was a good chance you'd be standing up for teammates with your fists? And how did that affect your psyche?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of coffee, a lot of Sudafed, a lot of stimulants. I mean, anything I can get my hands
Mini
on,
thins?
Really. What's that?
Mini thins?
Yeah. I swear to God, I went through phases of like everything. You know what I mean? It was like anything to jack me up and get me out of my out of my normal mindset, right? Because it's like you're going to war, right? I mean, it was it's a different way of thinking. But I always say like the physical part of being a fighter was the easiest part. It was just the psychological, it was the mental, the spiritual. Yeah. You know, jacking yourself up 30, 35 times a year. And that's the times that I actually fought a year. Let alone how many times I jacked myself up to fight. It was every game, every game. And some games I didn't fight, but I still just, jacked up myself to fight and prepared myself to fight. So it was a chronic state of anxiety. It's the simplest way I can to explain it.
And, when you're in a chronic state of anxiety, you're not in alignment with source. You know what I mean?
Not at all. No.
And source is, when we're in alignment with source, it's, that connection is moving in and through you unindated. Right. We're spiritual beings having a human experience as far as, I'm my belief.
Yeah, me too.
Thoughts do become things and, focusing mechanisms. Absolutely. So, we focus on expands, whatever we think about, we bring about. And it's funny, I was just talking to George Larac a couple of days ago and, you gotta be almost oblivious there's a massive spiritual awakening going on globally right now, even with what's going on with this thing, with this test, with the whole COVID thing. That could be a spiritual cleanse of the planet from our, from the creator, infinite intelligence, whatever you want to call it. It's interesting. And I love how, people are actually being open-minded now to, I don't know. I think we're spiritually awoken the time we land here on the scene on Earth, and then we get take all these paradigms and habits, along the way that kind of, take us away from actually those, like, who we really are. So it's kind of the return home is, kind of what we can find through, like, say, psychedelics or whatever other, healing modalities that can, help restore the brain to its natural state of homeostasis.
Right. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, it's so true that there is a spiritual awakening going on. People are becoming very aware that the system is extremely corrupt. And, the regulation, the laws, whatever you want to call them in place, not just, COVID related, but just around medicine and public health are completely flawed. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of death that comes along with this. But there's also going to be a raising, a rising consciousness. So there, there's always like the dark and the light. There's going to be a lot of people that are suffering. We talked about before, I think we're recording, but you had some friends that committed suicide, but the collateral damage of this is going to be very, very, very negative. But on the other side of it, there's going to be a lot of people that become, say, saved, right? You become aware of what's happening, your spiritual connection, your spiritual growth, and you're aware in the sense that you know what's going on, so you can save yourself. And I think that's important. So there's going to be a cluster of people that are going to have to, unfortunately, going to, see the darkness.
People are dropping like flies. That's just, yeah. I mean, you know, the truth. The truth of the matter is people are dropping like flies. I remember I was coming back from a film festival, actually, before this whole thing hit. And they interviewed me when I got off the plane. And I said, you know, it hasn't perpetuated, you know, like to where it's, you know, where it is now. But I think it's going to, like, you know, hit people a lot more on the mental health aspect than, you know, than the whole actual sickness, you know, the addiction, the mental health, you know, that whole bowl of crap, you know.
That's exactly what's happening.
That's what's happening. Yeah. You know, it's attacking the minds.
Day flatten the curve is 6 months later. And I mean, you mentioned it, rise of you know, antidepressants, rise of suicides, and, you know, you've crumbled the economy. I mean, we haven't seen anything yet. I mean, you know what I mean? I think, you know, give it another year to start, you know, start see the spreadsheet and the numbers and, you know, the collateral damage. But just being aware of it is important.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, talking to all, you know, my hockey buddies, you know, from, you know, past and present, you know, we still all, you know, kind of, you know, stay in touch and whatnot. And it's like all these hockey guys with tough guy personas that people, you know, what you did and who you are two separate entities.
Totally.
And, you know, because a lot of the, you know, we, like, the travel and all the trauma along the way, you know, a lot of that, you know, really opens up a spiritual breakthrough that takes you into like a vortex where you actually can kind of compartmentalize, you know, a little bit, kind of, you know, the universal laws of nature. You know, that's why, you know, I think, you know, getting into nature and, you know, even getting the blood moving, just, you know, getting into that divine inflow is just of utmost paramount, I think. I mean, that's just my humble opinion.
No, for sure. I mean, that's exactly what I've learned even pre-COVID. You know, when I first retired, you know, I had to swallow my pride and put my ego aside and realize, wow, I'm like, I'm not a hockey player. I'm not a fighter. You know, those are just my job. It's like, who am I? I needed to have, you know, that quote unquote ego death and be humbled. Yeah. And psychedelics certainly help with that. And, you know, now more than ever, you know, psilocybin mushrooms, I mean, ayahuasca, no matter what it is, I mean, you know, we need to be injected with that spirit back again. And then to your point, the comment you just made there is like, we need to start following the natural laws. And that starts with just simple nutrition, simple hydration, you know what I mean? Simple mindful movement, meditation, breath work. I mean, these are all, you know, I say essentially free meditation, breath work, mindful movement.
It all helps with self-regulation.
Yeah, exactly. May as well just buy some nutrient-rich foods. Be mindful of your hydration and in your thoughts.
Yeah.
And you know, those laws have never changed and they never will change. You know,
nope.
We feel like we, you know, the human race has kind of evolved, that we're like a species outside of, you know, a different form of life of some sort. We're a machine, I think.
Absolutely. You know? This is just an instrument through which higher powers are projecting themselves through.
Yeah.
You know, and I always say, you know, literally, I don't know, this came to me on a 15 gram megadose of psilocybin. And, you know, when I came out of it, I was like, literally, we're just holographic images projecting themselves through a human nervous system, becoming self-aware.
Right.
And, you know, I've done the ayahuasca, I've done DMT lots of times. I mean, the list goes on. You know, I microdose mushrooms 5 days a week. I got my neuro mood right here. Hey, I don't know. Microdose mushrooms are pretty awesome brand.
I've self-experimented with the microdosing for the last 4 years or so, on and off, different
really doses. Helps.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. So you've done the 15 grammer?
Oh shit. Yeah.
Oh man, that's a lot.
And it wasn't like, let's make it like, you know, for the record, it wasn't out camping with my buddies. It was under, you know, careful supervision.
I was going to say,
I went through hell and back. Holy Christ.
Yeah, it's probably like an ayahuasca ceremony almost.
Well, ayahuasca was gentle compared to the 15 grammar of mushrooms.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I did 15 and I did a 12 grammar. But you know, it did heal a lot of trauma.
Sure.
And, you know, it obviously, it's been proven that it creates new neural pathways in the brain.
Yeah.
It's funny because I did a TED Talks actually last year after I crossed Canada on my bike. And, you know, I was speaking about mental illness and natural based plant medicines and not downgrading. You know, I didn't want to, like, you know, bash, you know, big pharma. And sure enough, the TED Talks gets thrown up, and that all that 3 minutes of like super, like, I think, knowledgeable information that the, you know, people need to know, like these natural plant medicines that are helping people, they cut all that out.
Really?
So yeah. So it's, I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, yeah, a lot of those big conglomerates are all in bed together, right?
So. Oh, sure, yeah. Well, it's so it's information suppression, right? They don't want people too conscious, too aware, you know?
Yeah, and it can be overwhelming sometimes, too, when you become very aware. And, you know, it's because you're picking up on, you know, everybody else's frequencies and energy vibrations and whatnot, yep. You know? And
I find myself with that, yeah, all the time now. Because you become so empathetic, right? I mean, and you said you have to learn how to protect your energy. And because it's like you realize how sick people are and how much mental health issues there are and addiction issues there are. So when you start speaking to these people, they're, you know, they rob you of your energy, you know?
100%. Yeah, my circle's gone from like that to like that. And, but the people, you know, I'm grateful, you know, I get to talk to a guy like you who I believe is very like-minded, you know, and, you know, we get to have a cool chat like this and give people, you know, some education on, you know, actually with, you know, natural healing modalities, not the kind of, you know, I was addicted to benzos for 7+ years. You know, I was given to that by my doctor because I went in there for 15 minutes. I told him I was sad and a little bit depressed because I was, you know, I lost 2 friends due to, you know, certain circumstances with substance abuse and whatnot. I lost a relationship. And after 15 minutes, he writes me a prescription for Xanax and lithium, tells me I'm bipolar. And, you know, as my life, you know, went on, you know, and now, you know, it's all plant medicines, you know, it's a CBD, it's a psilocybin, it's, you know, just eating well.
Right.
It was all PTSD. Everything was all PTSD. It was all at the end. That was the core root, you know, was the trauma. The trauma led to the
PTSD. I mean, it always is. I mean, if they were just a little more honest with it all, unfortunately, you know, most of these medical doctors are not trained in nutrition. They're not trained in plant medicine.
They're not trained in the great university of life.
That's it, right? No, all they're trained in is pharmaceuticals, surgeries, and probably some highly expensive other treatments. But
well, yeah, they get paid every time they write a script. They get a, you know, that's why my psychiatrist is driving a Ferrari.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah,
whatever. I mean, people are, you know, they can make their own decisions, but I think, you know, as things are moving forward, you know, the, people are starting to become more, a lot more open to it. So, you know, being an ex-enforcer, how have you transitioned into advocating brain health? And do you think fighting should be removed from the game?
Ooh. So I retired in 2010. I was 28 years old. I had another year on my contract with the Flyers, one-way contract. And it's funny how, you know, when you put out energy to the universe, how the universe responds. So that last year with the Flyers, my last playing year with the Flyers, the head coach got fired. Peter Laviolette came in and really had a diminished role. So that whole year I was kind of like in the soul searching mode, and I was starting to read, and I never read before, you know, and I read books and started reading and started just trying to, I was just like, do anything to find answers, right? And I started to recognize that I started being more honest with myself about substance abuse, right? I wouldn't ever call myself like an alcoholic, but I, you know, substance abuse meaning that I disrespected the use of any products. I mean, it was whether it was alcohol,
extreme,
whether it was cannabis, whether it was food, I mean, you name it, I misused it, right? So being honest with that, I was like, wow, man. So I'm like thinking about in that season about enrolling in a traditional substance abuse program, and then had my year-end physicals and everything, go back to Winnipeg. And not 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from Paul Holmgren, who was the general manager at the time.
Yeah.
He says, hey, there's a job opening with the Phantoms, which is the American Hockey League team for the Flyers. It was in Adirondack at the time. Shel Samuelson's house burnt down. He was assistant coach for the Phantoms, and there's an opening. He's like, I know from our, you know, year-end meetings, where your head's at and blah, blah, blah. He's like, I want to offer this job. So like right there in the moment, I was like, well, I got another one-way contract. I live my life, you know, my whole childhood of like trying to live the dream. And I'm actually thinking about forfeiting, you know, $600,000. And you know, I wasn't like a highly paid guy anyways, you know, I was on like my fourth year in the NHL, and I'm actually thinking about retiring. But in my gut, immediately I knew that I had to retire. I was like, this is my opportunity to, you know, stay in the game and
live.
get live, yeah, and get on the other side of the fence and exit stage left. Bow out of the game with honor. They've been the Flyers are very loyal to me. I wanted to be loyal with them. And then again, going back to my relationship with cannabis and psilocybin, in my gut, I just knew, I'm like, I can tackle this with plant medicine and nutrition from the small amount of knowledge that I accrued that last year. So I hung up the phone with them that night. I called them back next morning. I was like, I'm taking the job. So right away when I made that decision, I was like, I'm all in on this health and wellness thing and brain health and everything. So that was when I started to understand these other minor cannabinoids like CBD. I started to recognize. So I learned that the U.S. government held a patent on cannabinoids as neuroprotectants, started understanding some of the science behind psilocybin mushrooms. So I started using these tools, these plant-based medicines with intention. Intention, like mindful using them, you know, where I hadn't before. Going back to diet, I reeled in my diet. I made this like, you know, I mean, most people think I'm extreme, but I was like, what's more extreme? You know, lining up in a casket.
I don't.
You know, and this is like cleaning up my diet, you know? So people are like, wow, you're so disciplined. I'm like, really? I mean, I don't want to land up like the rest of these people, you know? So clean up my diet, you know, really just remove refined carbohydrates and refined sugars and processed foods. And right away, like I was 215 pounds when I was playing as a heavyweight enforcer. I'm like 185 pounds. I lost like 25 pounds.
You weigh
like
the same weight. I just weighed myself. You're the same weight as me. I'm usually I'm usually 210. Now I'm 185. I'm the same weight as I was when I was 16.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. But you feel
it's
great.
My diet. Right? I still, I'm not. I don't eat meat. You know,
it's amazing how you feel, right? So you immediately start feeling well, and then you're using these tools, these allies around you properly, you know? So obviously, you know, I was using cannabis, I was increasing my CBD, I was using a little less THC, I started using, you know, psilocybin mushrooms, you know, as like a micro meditation by myself with no distractions, where every time I'd use psilocybin, there'd be people around, and you know, I had some good times, probably some good insights, but, you know, major downloads, and then, you know, changed my whole exercise regimen from, you know, being a power lifter, heavy lifter to yoga, you know what I mean? And started breathing, you know, it was like, ooh, it's like all these like things that seemed to be so like taboo for me before were now becoming my way of life. So, but naturally it always went back to the brain health, right? So it's like, well, I started understanding my GI health, right? The connection between our gut health and the main brain, where there's a lot of people will say your gut is your main brain, you know, not the brain in your head. And
I'm actually reading a book on gut health right now. Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, I just started to understand all these things. Mushrooms, a prebiotic, and, you know, functional mushrooms, not just psilocybin, and, you know, nutritional profile of hemp seed. So it was like this whole package deal that it was all things wellness. Yeah, and I talk a lot about mental health and mental wellness and brain health, but you can't have one without the other when you talk about, you know, everyone says the mind, body, spirit, right? I mean, it's like, well, that's very true. I mean,
that's most people all integrated.
Say it, but they don't necessarily understand it or live it. Because when you have good physical health and spiritual health, your mental health will be intact too, right? Yeah. So all these things combined are just like, I'm just like, this is my mission. It's like all things wellness. Yeah, I get specific sometimes with certain things I'm doing and what I'm talking about. But I mean, when I talk about human optimization, optimum wellness, you have to have a healthy physical body, healthy mind, and a really strong spiritual practice. If one of those three things is severed or you're confused, there's always going to be friction as far as, you know, the way you feel and the way you think you're supposed to be.
Instead of alignment.
It's alignment. Exactly.
Resistance. Wow. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
It's funny. I read this. I started reading spiritual books probably 15, 16 years ago. I never read a book all through high school. I think I lost a lot of fair weathered friends through the whole deal. My nickname's Philly. My last name is Philip. So everyone calls me Philly, paradoxical as it is.
That's a great name.
Thanks. So you can call me Philly if you want, whatever. Riles. Anyways, they're like, oh yeah, Philly's gone all religious now. He's all like, it wasn't really like that. I just, you know, when I was reading these books, you know, I'd have non-physical energy just rippling through my being. And, you know, it even talked in these books just that, you know, when you become more spiritually in tune, you want to change your diet, your habits, like everything just becomes all about wellness, like, you know, on an unconscious level, even.
Yeah, exactly.
And So exactly. It's, you know, and being creatures of habit, you know, once you get into that habitual groove, you know, it just becomes part of everyday life and you just get into that flow, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it's funny how it works. You know, your body is just trying to survive, right? I mean, the physical body is trying to survive, and the our spirit is just trying to, you said alignment, is just trying to come in line with everything. Unfortunately, it's like the old saying goes, we don't die, we kill ourselves. You know, it's like we just have so many bad habits and poor daily behaviors that we can never really become whole. And then all of a sudden, when the people do around us, we think that they're crazy or they're weird. And you know what I mean? They do all these weird things. And it's just because we don't understand it. We're vibrating at a lower frequency. You know what I mean? And so they say religious. Well, it's like, I don't think what you're doing is necessarily
spiritual vibration.
Oh, it's spiritual, right? I mean, that just shows the disconnection between religion and spirituality, that they would make comments like that. And, but you know, I can speak for myself, and it sounds like you deal with the same thing. Is like people observe energy, right? I mean, energy is like undeniable. You can see it. You can feel it. People act and the way their demeanor is. Is I find that people like looking at me, weird in the sense that like, you know, I'm saying this in a humble way, where it seems like they're just trying to figure me out. Like, where is this energy coming from? What is he really speaking about? And how does he know that? How does he know that? Because we don't know that, and we haven't been taught that. But I mean, once you mentioned at the start of this source, once you start tapping into, you know, universal frequencies and universal energy of source energy, there's probably 1,000 names for it now that I've heard. You can't help but to want to become more conscious, and that's just becoming through conscious behaviors that land up becoming essentially subconscious behaviors, you know, because it's like once you start doing things regularly and they're good behaviors, you don't even have to think about them, and you don't have to feel like you're as disciplined. You know, when you first start something, it's like, ooh, I'm really disciplined. I feel like I'm disciplined. But now I wake up in the morning, it's like I'm not craving, you know, high carbohydrates. I mean, I usually fast. And I fast at all. I'm going through a 24-hour fast right now. I usually fast until, you know, 2 p.m. So I don't wake up in the morning craving carbohydrates where I used to.
Yeah.
Because I was so off with my body and everything, you know what I mean? And craving things. And I just like soothe my gut with some, you know, non-caffeinated tea. I'll use some functional mushrooms and some CBD in the morning and just ride that wave through the day. But it's funny how, like, when you start becoming really disciplined, that it doesn't seem like it's discipline. It's just like, it's instinctive. It's just the way I am now. And it sounds like you're the same way.
Because
you
absolutely. And I think that word spiritual is even being like overused these days. I mean, I try not to judge anybody. To judge another is to judge ourselves, you know, but really at the end of the day, being spiritual to me is just being your true self. You know, if it's not being anything outside of you. You know, it's just being who you truly are, and just, you know, speaking from the heart, being empathetic towards others. And, you know, sometimes that's taken the wrong way. I mean, but whatever, you know, like,
yeah, no, you can't please everybody. And not that
I'm me, you're you. We're all at the end of the day, I believe, you know, we're all one, attached to nothing, but connected to everything.
That's it. And that's it. That's when you remove your name, you remove your job, and you remove your physical body. What are you? I mean, it's like you're exactly right. And I think that's like part of the process, the spiritual growth. I've several times thought about changing my name completely.
So
just like a lot of people do, because it's like, not that I want to do it again. I don't want to do it. Part of the reason I didn't do it is because people will think, oh, he's doing this for attention. But it's really, it ends up being is like, I'm just trying to set, because people that think they know me as like the fighter. It's like, oh, right. Oh yeah. The fighter. It's like, that's not me. You know what I mean? So I just thought in my mind, it's like, you know, if I had a new name and I just severed that association with my past, then, you know, I can just be me.
Yeah.
But I haven't taken that leap of faith yet, but I thought about it several times. I remember doing the ayahuasca earlier this year, where when I came out of it, I was like, they're like, right away, I was like, I got to change my name. I got to change my name and start from scratch here. But I think it really,
total reset.
Like, it's just detaching from everything material. I mean, we have this obsession with things outside of us. We have to buy, consume.
The disease of more.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's exactly it. Right?
Had it for many years.
Yeah, me too, man. I mean, I had every disease, you know, it's like all these diseases.
Which has gotten you to where you are at this stage of your evolution. You're a teacher now, you know, now you're able to heal people, you know, through your just through being you. you know, yeah. Not the fighter. You were never really the fighter. It was just something that you did.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
My cousins, yeah. Actually, I don't know. You might've played again. You know, Brent Henley.
Yeah, big, I do. Yeah. I was a big guy, right?
Big Brent Henley. Yeah. That's my cousin. Course, yeah. 6'8", about 200. Yeah,
I never fought him. I'm going to coach against him. Was he, how old is he?
He would be, he's 5 years younger. He'd be 39.
Okay. So he's my age. Yeah. So I definitely know who he is. I never fought him though. I know that, but I know exactly who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, God, off the ice, I mean, nicest guy in the world. He hated fighting, but yeah. That was the only way he could make it to like the level that he got to, you know. He never made the NHL, went to a lot of camps and whatnot, but, you know, he suffers still, you know, like all the concussions and whatnot, but he's not at that point right now where he's open to, you know, different healing modalities that can, you know, not say fix you, but, maybe give you a better version of who you can be, you know?
Exactly. Add a few more tools to the toolbox, you know, it's like what it is. It's like, you know, most of us are walking around with half empty toolboxes or, you know, the wrong tools in the toolbox. It's like I said, you're trying to build a house without a hammer. And so it's pretty, it's pretty tough to do, but all of a sudden you start using having the right tools around you. You can do some amazing things. But what I've learned and I fail at this a few times, especially my own family members, is like when you try and rush something or push something on somebody, be like, you know, I was so excited to help people and share the knowledge with people. But a lot of people are just not ready for it. That's what I've learned. You know, you're not ready.
They have to be in the receptive mode.
Yeah. It's these plant seeds. And it's like, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear type of deal. It's like, he's got to plant seeds. And it's like, at the end of the day, I don't do any healing. It's like the individual does the healing. It's like, okay, I can introduce you to a few tools. Even the psychedelics have a really powerful way of, you know, having people turn inwards and looking at themselves and evaluate themselves. But you come out of that experience, you still got to go home and do the work.
Absolutely.
I can't do the work for him. You can't do the work for him. I mean, it's like, so you're your own healer. And then you just have to help people recognize that. Yeah. And once they do, then they're on their own because you can always be a resource for them. But I mean, you know, the work has to be done. I mean, that's an everyday thing. You got to be on your daily regimen every day. As soon as you start, you know, taking the shortcuts, karma kicks in and starts throwing you curveballs. And as soon as you stay in line with the, say, source energy.
It's all energy. I always say, you know, energy is nature's universal set of building blocks in which he constructs everything perceptible to man, even man itself. You know, these two men that are speaking right now over the ether of the web or whatever, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's all, everything's vibration. Everything's vibratory energy. So if you're going to take down that vibratory energy with, say, like benzodiazepines, pharmaceuticals that are like not beneficial for your overall well-being, you're fucked.
That's the truth.
Or you're going to go down the fuckness, and to get out of the fuckness is going to be a journey.
It's even harder. Oh, yeah. It's a tough one. What I always say to people is like, and I've learned this like over and over and over again, is like giving your power away, right? I mean, it's like we're empowered beings. Like we're all kind of like shamans at one point of our lives.
All like little gods.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And we slowly over time give away our power, give away our power, give away our power. Like, you know, people are making you mad, upset. You know what I mean? How do you react to them? But then we talk about medicine. It's like, okay, well, now I got sick. And then now I'm putting all my power, all my faith into the system. Where they're going to cure me, right? I mean, that's the thinking, right? It's like, I'm going to go to the doctor. He's going to give me a pill or a series of pills or treatments, and they're going to heal me. I'm cured. So I can go back home and I can live this Western industrialized life that we were living before without making any changes, right? And that's just like, we've given our power away, or we're no longer empowered.
Yeah.
So how can we be healers and heal ourselves when we have no accountability? You know, we've already given that power away. So now you gotta go get that power back. It's hard. It's hard because
you gotta tap the source.
Exactly.
Not always easy.
Not easy. No, it's not. No, so
that's why I think meditation is actually you know, key component of my practice, you know, breathing, meditation. And did I ever think that I'd be going down this spiritual wormhole? No. Not a chance. I mean, I've done a lot of crappy things in my life that, you know, I've been, and not been able to forgive those things even with myself and be okay with it. But the more I meditate, the more I kind of make peace with my past, which has helped me, like the psilocybin has helped me huge with that.
Right.
is being able to make peace with the past. You know,
you have to forgive yourself. Like, forgiveness it's an old is story. Like number one spiritual teaching, right? It's forgiveness. It's yourself all about and
forgiveness. Number one, forgive yourself. Love yourself first. Then you can radiate that love outwards. And it's all about love, man. At the end of the day, love.
It's universal energy, right?
100%. The highest frequency is the vibration of love.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like too, when you start acting out of a place of love, and people, you know, people that don't really understand what we're talking about, like when you hear love, it's like right away you think of like, you know, love in the sense of you love your children. Or you love your wife or your husband, right? I mean, it's like you basically there's no other like love, but it's like acting out of love is just like, it's just being a good human all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's being a listener instead of speaking over people. It's like, you just like, you're treating animals with respect. You know what I mean? It's just like everything. It's love for your environment. It's like, okay, well, instead of, you know, being absolutely mindless of our carbon footprint, all of a sudden now we're showing love to our environment and supporting hemp versus, you know, synthetic fibers like nylon and, you know, dirty crops like cotton. So love is just like everything. But if you lead through love, I mean, it's just, you're putting out good karma always just like being completely unconscious to it. And then you're going through your life and you're wondering why bad things constantly happening to you. Why, you know, it's just like this dark force around me. It's like, well, cause you're putting out negative energy. You're coming out of a place of anger or hate usually. You know what I mean? Or regret. And, you know,
well, jealousy, whatever you're putting out is like coming back, vibration. Like you said. It's like, you know, broadcasting and receiving station for the vibration of thought. You know, thoughts, energy moving at an inconceivably high rate of vibration. Really. So, you know, when you're shooting it out, be careful, especially with that intention. And especially if you're an intense guy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It'll come back pretty goddamn quick.
real quick. One of the big things I talk about is like your morning routine, right? Like the minute you wake up, like what are you doing, what are you thinking about? So most people wake up and they're like, they're, you know, the motherfucking their past, or you know what I mean, or like the negative thing that happened last week or last year or 10 years ago, right away you're in those, like you're living in this past moment. Then you get on your phone and you're probably looking at more garbage, right? You're filling up your mental factory with all kinds of crap. And then you're going about your day.
Yeah.
And then you started off your day in this negative, you know, this negative vibration, not the present future. You're not in a position to create because you're living in the past. And I think to your point of creativity earlier, girls, you know, we're supposed to be, creative beings. Say hi. I'm just going to wrap up. Okay. And then
how are you? Yeah. We got Ralph's daughter on there. What's your name?
This is Kinsley.
Hey, Kinsley.
Ash. So it's just like when you're in line, you're able to be more creative, right? I mean, but if you're constantly living in the past and filling your mental factory with pollution, anxiety, frustration, all these different things, it's hard. It's just hard to be, you know, in line
in the moment. Authentic presence, so to speak, you know, those higher self, higher faculties aren't able to actually, you know, integrate themselves into our physical reality, you know. So what sort of spiritual practices such as yoga and meditation do you practice to enhance your mood and overall well-being?
So yoga is like, I realized my whole philosophy is like a hybrid of yoga philosophy and shamanism, but I actually am training. I mean, I'm training to become a yoga teacher, certified yoga teacher.
That's
and
awesome.
Not that necessarily that I'm doing it to become a full-time yoga instructor. It's really more just because I'm obsessed with the philosophy of it. Right. I mean, it is deep, but makes a ton of sense. I mean, I connect with it on so many levels. So I'm obsessed with it. So within the yoga philosophy, obviously the things you're talking about are in play. So everything is breath, right? I mean, it's prana is, you know, the life force. It's like, you know, so, you know, being a fighter too, I find it funny. Like, you know, I always remember being so tired after fights and, you know, and going to sit in the penalty box, like, wow, how can I be out of shape? And I realized I was holding my breath. And it's like, why would you be holding your breath as a fighter? I mean, it makes no sense, right? I mean, you're dying out. So, you know, it's like when I got into breath work and the whole bit, I said, you know, like, wow, I'm like, imagine if I would have actually been training breathing, which is like, you know, it's a subconscious behavior, but if you actually train it, you open up all these different, you know, opportunities to enhance your performance and focus and the immune system, and all these positive things. So I got, you know, breath work. I mean, breath work, I mean, just practicing the physical practice of yoga is like everything is breath, right? I mean, it's moving with breath and being mindful of breath and trying to remove clutter. And then you talk about stillness, right? And meditation, stilling the mind and sitting still. I don't think I ever had done that my whole life before I retired at 28. Not once did I ever say like, okay, Riley, let's take 10 minutes for ourselves. Let's just close our eyes and let's just be. You know, because I was just like, oh, no, I got to go to the gym. I got to go work out. I got to go here. And I got to go be a meathead, you know. So it's like so important for mental health is just calming the mind and sitting still.
I mean, for our whole physiology, our sympathetic nervous system, everything is all connected. Right. So it's like, you know, when you're spinning like a one legged duck.
Right.
It's you're going nowhere fast and accomplishing really not a whole lot and then burning yourself out to exhaustion and not even really having any joy or fulfillment in life.
That's it, right? Yeah. And that's exactly where I was at. I was just like, I drove myself into the ground where I had no longer physical energy. I always thought I was gonna live forever and play hockey forever, fight forever. Like I was like, you know, the super human being. But I mean, you know, the universe has a way of slapping you in the face and putting you in your seat sometimes, right? And that's what it did. So you know, thank God it all happened the way it did. And I'm so grateful, honestly. And find these tools, you know, like say the yoga, people think of just yoga as like the physical exercise, but yoga is like a philosophy of life, right? And it's a way of life. And only three of the eight limbs of yoga actually involve the physical body. It's all about the mind and spirit. It's concentration, focus, meditation, enlightenment, liberation, you know, the whole bit. So breath work, meditation, a huge piece of that. You say spiritual practices. I mean, I say nutrition is a spiritual practice, right? That food be that medicine, medicine be that food. I mean, nutrition is like everything. Your body is just craving nutrients. It's not craving processed food. I mean, it is now because we're addicted to it, but it's like your body just wants nutrients. It wants to live and it wants to be nourished. You know, our gut health, our gut just wants real food in it. Yep. I say that's a spiritual practice because it lands up being something that, again, substance abuse. I mean, I was the first one to admit it. I abused food. I'm not talking abusing carrots and cucumbers and apples. I mean, I was abusing all of the bullshit processed food and refined sugar and the whole bit where I was addicted. I was physically addicted to sugar. Most people probably are.
Yeah, you're probably the same as me. My body's so sensitive to putting anything in it now. I don't drink. I've been a sober guy for, you know, quite some time. Not that I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but I definitely, you know, being in, you know, playing hockey and then getting into, you know, I was in the, you know, the underground marijuana industry for many years. You know, just that fast lane lifestyle, you know, you go hard all night on a bender and then, you know, you're eating cheeseburgers and crap the next day. And it doesn't really affect you when you're younger. But then as you get older, it's like, I mean, I put something in my body that like say like gluten or whatever, like just the, like the littlest bit, even like, I mean, I love pizza, but I can't eat pizza that's not gluten free or else it fucks with me so bad that like, I literally like mentally, I feel off, lethargic. I got no energy. But I mean, if I'm eating like, you know, clean and mean, whatever, you know, I can get it. It's like, I don't need naps during the day. I can flow all night and whatever, and just keep going. And I mean, that's what living's about. It's not about, you know, sleeping your life away and, you know, being like, you know, depleted of our energy meridian, so to speak, and our chakra system, all that stuff that, you know, I'd like to have you on another time and maybe even talk about breath work. Cause that's something that, you know, if people could just breathe more into the present moment, then they'd be more grounded and less depersonalized and whatnot. And so that's maybe something we can do in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do that. Yeah. Wim Hof is kind of my mentor. I mean, everybody knows Wim Hof. I mean, it's pretty powerful. Some of the stuff that he does and shows you the power of the mind, right? I mean, the power of breath and, you know, life force itself. So, I mean, it's amazing, but I think, again, it's just like another thing to do for people, right? It's like, oh, I got to do that too yet. I mean, it's like, well, 10 minutes. I mean, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. People spend more time on their Instagram feed, and, you know, 10 minutes, you know, the first thing in the morning. Why don't you sit down and breathe a little bit, you know? And I wanted to kind of say something to your point there. When you're younger and you're eating the way we do and drinking the way we do, you don't know what it's like to feel good. Really good. You know what I mean? You think you feel good, but you really don't know what that really truly feels like because you've never experienced it until you rid yourself of these toxins and the poison and the garbage. And then all of a sudden you feel like amazing. You're like, holy shit. Like, how did I not know this or do this before? How did I not feel like this before? So then when you do have, you know, you go back to, you know, say you have a cheat night and you have some, you know, shitty food or whatever, how sensitive you are to it, how it bogs you down and it brings you back down to that lower vibration. It's like, oh, I don't really want to feel like this. So I'm just going to stay away from that. That's like the discipline of just feeling good. And then the alcohol, I haven't had a sip of alcohol in, you know, I guess close to a year now. And not that I'm like going to say I'm going sober the rest of my life. And, but I just like, don't like the way I feel. I have one sip of wine and that'd be like the only thing I drank in the last 10 years is, you know, a glass of wine or two here and there. And it just makes me feel like garbage the next day where, you know, again, lowering my vibration where I was like, I don't really want to feel like this. I got, you know, two young girls that require a ton of energy, you know, and, if I'm off a little bit, you know, it's like, and then I look back at how many naps I took. I napped every single day for like 2 hours a day. I was like, I couldn't wait to leave the rink and go home and sleep. And it's like, I don't nap. I don't nap. I have sustainable energy. So once you tap into that, it's the idea is to not want to ever go back to that. And that's just being in tune and recognize the energy that bogs you down and the true energy that you're getting from nutrition and fasting and supplements and, you know, and yoga, breath work and the whole bit. And you feel amazing. So you don't ever want to go back to that. I mean, it's,
no,
it's hard to explain to people. It's like, you don't understand energy. That's the thing is like, we're, you know, and I was the worst one for it. I thought energy meant like stimulants. I need caffeine. I needed coffee. I need something to give me this energy, but energy is like, you know, especially talking about energy, like physical energy. I mean, it's like, we only have so much of it, prana, life force. And it's like, it comes from different ways. Like, it's amazing how some of these yogis, like these true ancient yogis would fast for days on end and breathe and they get energy from breath. You know what I mean? It's life force. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, how can a human think, well, in the Western culture, think that you can actually sustain life for more than one day on just breathing? You know what I mean? It's like a breathing. It's like, I mean, it's like, it's fundamental. It's like, but then you talk about actually engaging in breath work and tapping into energy sources way beyond
sources from unknown forces.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Way beyond food. Right. I mean, you think of food as energy. Yeah, it is energy. It's supposed to give you energy, not rob you of energy. Yeah. So the whole like turkey dinner analogy, it's like, well, people want to blame it on tryptophan. Well, yeah, there's probably some science behind tryptophan actually make you a little bit lethargic, but what about the stuffing? What about the overeating? What about the potatoes and all the other shit that you're eating along, you know? But most people, that's the way we eat, you know? It's like, we got to eat biggest meal of the day, first thing in the morning, right? So like, what do? You eat 1,000-1,500 calories of usually starchy foods and you're tired. Right off the bat, right in the morning, your first thing, you're energized and you're tired from now your body's in overdrive. We're digesting food.
Yeah, I had this discussion the other day.
More coffee. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, that's the cycle, right?
Well,
you rely on sugar and refined sugar and stimulants to get through the day. And then you never really understand true energy source, right?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you put something that's dead in your system that's been, you know, injected with, you know, steroids and all kinds of other chemicals. You know, that's going to take away life. You put something that's raw into your food that's like, you know, natural, it's going to give you life, you know? Yeah. So do you want more life or do you want to be like more, anyways?
Yeah. No, it's funny because you bring that up too, because it's like, if you ask every person on the planet, everyone says they want to live. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, there's obviously a few people that don't want to live, like they're done with it now, but like, at some point in our lives, we all wanted to live, right? I mean, it was like, oh yeah, of course. And no, everyone's spirit is dying. I mean, everyone's like at some point in your life.
Yeah.
But then then if you were to like show them their daily behaviors and say, well, this is robbing you of energy. This is killing you. This is killing you. This is killing you. This is killing you. You're like, you know, everything in moderation. Ah, you know, it's like, yeah, you only live once, you know, it's like, so the attitude changes completely. It's like, well, what kind of quality of life are you actually looking for? Because if you just want to use this umbrella term for life, which is like just being alive, like our physical body's just alive, but we're mentally and spiritually dead. Well, what kind of life is that? So it's like, okay, no one's making out of this life alive. We're all going to, you know, physical bodies are all going to decay and die. But like, what is your version of life and how did that feel? You know, was it happiness or is it depression? You know, is it like joy or are you in anger and you're miserable? You know what I mean? It's polar opposite. So when people talk about, you want to give the religious talk about, you know, heaven and hell, I mean, it's like, to me, heaven and hell is a place here on earth. It's absolutely right here between your ears, you know? And it's like, you're either living in heaven or you're living in hell right now. So why we wait until we die to think we're going to a place that has those options? You know what I mean?
And the like, power of choices, you know, we actually, you know, have been gifted with, you know, for the most part, with the power of making choices. You mm-hmm. know, it's a lot of people, choose wisely. I mean, life's unpredictable as it is. You never know. You know, it's like, be willing to die every day because the next day is a blessing. You know, it's right. just like, so what are you going to do with today? You know, like, what am I going to do today that's going to like contribute to this world in a positive way, in a positive light? You know, yeah. like opening a door for somebody, you know, just like that can make somebody's day, you know, yeah. like just a little
smiling things. At somebody.
Smiling. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm learning to work on that because I, you know, not that I'm a guy that doesn't smile, but I mean, I think I assume that role of like, you know, like mean business so long that it's like, you know, and I try and go to my way to, you know, make a joke to people. And I think like the way I look is a little more serious, you know, so people like, you know, whether they're intimidated or not sure of me. So I try to make small talk and make, you know, bust the one liner out and try and at least crack a smile, you know, he's looking at me a little smirk, but you know, it's something small, but it's meaningful, right? Because you think about like how many people are really in dark places. Absolutely. A smile, it's like, you know, it's energy, right? It's like all yeah. of a sudden for a fraction of a second, you'd be like, you know, like, you know, I feel good. Just a little smile, you know, but you just got to take the little wins, right? Little wins, you know,
it's all up.
It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. That's for sure. No,
absolutely.
That's so easy, just life.
Who was, I mean, some people probably want to hear this. Who was the so-called toughest guy that you ever fought and were you scared?
Well, there's about, you know, maybe say 3 to 5 of them. You know, you mentioned George LaRocque. He's, I say he was like, you know, the heavyweight champ, but Donald Brashear was right there with him. You know, guys like Brian McGrattan, right there with him. You know, Wade Belak. There's, you know, about 4 or 5, say, legitimate super heavyweights that, you know, I ran into. So I think I fought George 4 times, you know, Brashear 4 or 5 times. So between those two guys, Brian McGrattan had a couple fights with, one in the minors and one in the NHL. But I'd say Georgie or, you know, Brashear beat my ass pretty good at one time. We're actually with George. I had out of the 4 fights, I'd say 3 of them were draws. And I mean, for me, an undersized guy going up against, you know, the biggest, baddest dude, I'll take that, you know, any day. And didn't knock my head off, which he almost did the one night. But so those two guys were really, probably my hardest fighters. And they're both lefties too. I was a lefty and most of the guys I was fighting were righties. So I think not that I had an advantage, but I seemed to catch a lot of righties being a lefty and fighting in tight and everything, but these were lefties. So now I had to change my style with not getting hit by one of these, you know, heavyweight punches, being a lefty and a lefty. So a little bit more strategy involved with those guys, but yeah, learned a lot in fighting. That's for sure.
Yeah. So, you've been very open about your healing journey for anyone, not just hockey players, that deal with trauma. What's your advice to them?
Well, what I've learned is that if there's any substance abuse, say addiction issues, there's always trauma. I think everyone has trauma of some sort, right? And growing up, and I was naive to this, you think of trauma, you think of like trauma overseas at war, right? It's got, or someone's got to see somebody die right in front of them. Yeah, that is absolutely trauma. There's no question. But I realized that I had a different type of trauma, and my trauma ended up being in this chronic state of anxiety where I had PTSD after I retired. I recognized, like, you know, hearing the national anthem was uncomfortable for me because that was like the last moment that I had peace before I went to war and before I was going to fight and be this, you know, this crazy being. What I always say is that you have to face your trauma. You have to make peace with your past, as you said. You have to make peace with your trauma. And a lot of times it's uncomfortable, whether you go to a therapist and talk about it or you eat 5 grams or 15 grams of mushrooms, you're going to face your traumas. You're going to explore the past.
Maybe start with 5. Don't do the 15 right off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it lands up being, you know, the psychedelics in general, you know, they have a – an interesting way of showing you trauma, your trauma, but making peace with it. You know, you kind of bow out to it and move on and release these energy blockages. So I think what most people tend to do, and I was guilty of this, is like you bury your trauma, right? And that's alcohol, it's substance abuse, food. I mean, whatever drug it lands up being, the drug of choice or a combination of them, we bury it. We want to bury it. And then the self-talk becomes more and more negative. I'm not good enough. I'm not, you know, I'm not this, I'm not that. And, you know, but what we realize is that we all had some sort of trauma and some sort of, you know, negative thing that we have to overcome. Fear.
Being born is trauma.
Being born, yeah, it's trauma, right? Exactly. And fear is just like, you know, fear kind of comes associated with traumas. It's like we have to face our fears. We cannot be a slave to our trauma and or our fear. You know what I mean? So most people's fear of death or fear of
evidence appearing right, eh?
What's that?
Said false evidence appearing right, eh?
Yeah, fear. Right. That's exactly
that four-letter word just sucks. But you know, we can use it as a motivating factor as well.
Yeah, fear has its place for immediate danger, right? I mean, if I'm out with you and you know in Kelowna or something like that, and we hear something in the bush, we'd be like, okay, well, fear response goes up, you know, our hairs go up, and say, okay, well, let's remove ourselves from the danger, and then you know we're no longer in danger. The fear goes away. But when you're constantly living in fear, and I think COVID is probably a good example of, you know, chronic fear, where now people are literally hemming themselves in their basements in their house, and they don't go out and be a human being because they're in fear. They're going to get this the imaginary boogeyman's going to get them. Well, there's been boogeymans all around all the time. We're constantly fighting viruses and you know, and bacteria and everything else. So it's like you can choose to be human and you know, you can do human things, or you can bury yourself into your basement. But living in fear, I mean, what's this thing I just heard? It was fear is the fuel that fires the furnace of disease. Yeah. And if you look at like what fear does to your vibration, what it does to your body from a level of biology and your gut and your immune system, it's like it puts you in a state of acidity.
Cortisol levels.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in fear, it's like, it's a negative vibration, and we're trying to find peace and joy and happiness. So
then you get your amygdala, you know, the seat of our emotions. That's just, you know, buzzing like that. And,
right.
You know, either on fight or flight. And when it's on fight, say, you know, 99.9% of the time for a lot of people, I mean, they're scared shitless out of their wits.
That's it. Yeah. So there's no like simple answer that I can give you besides you have to face the trauma. You have to face the darkness, but it's slow win, like small wins. But just like if you can just cram in one good daily behavior a day, and cram out one bad daily behavior, whether it's just your morning one piece of your morning routine. Start by, instead of waking up and picking up your phone, maybe the win for that day is maybe let's just leave the phone there for 30 minutes, and let's just, whatever, breathe or meditate, or you know, just grab a cup of tea, non-caffeinated. I do drink caffeine, but just like to start the day calm, and you know what I mean. And just like one little thing, that's a win. That's a small
start
win.
Start the day calm.
Start the day calm. Right?
Calm and in gratitude.
Right, and then then slowly build from there. Because what you're gonna find is like as you start incorporating and or cramming in more positive daily behaviors, you cram out more negative ones, that your life like naturally becomes better. But I mean, at the end of the day, we still have to address our trauma in our past and forgive ourselves. It comes back to self-love and self-care, right? I mean, it's if there's no forgiveness, there's really no true self-love or really true, you know, energy of love that we can emit. So there's a lot there, I know, but it's always turning inwards, looking at ourselves. The answers lie within us.
Self-introspection.
Yeah. They land up being already there. We're looking outside of ourselves for the answers, unfortunately, a lot of times.
Usually for the majority is self-validation, you know?
Self-validation.
I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. Yeah. But everybody is worthy, even the people that are so-called sociopaths and narcissists and whatnot, something probably happened to them in the past that actually led them onto to being that way or whatever, right. You know,
hurt so people hurt people, right?
Hurt, exactly. You know, and then there's that iceberg, right? There's like, you know, underneath hurt or anger is usually right. Hurt, you know, there's whatever right. There's up and it's tough, you know, peeling the onion, the layers of the onion away. Sometimes it's like, it's not the easiest thing to do in the world when you've been through a lot of stuff, especially a guy that's played, you know, a lot of years, you know, in hockey and, you know, all the travel and whatnot and waking up, where am I today? Who do we play tomorrow? You know, it's, yeah. You know, it's a lot of life experience packed into a short amount of time. And then mm-hmm. When you're done, it's like, okay, now what? But like, yeah. It's really awesome that you've been able to discover your definiteness of purpose.
Yeah. Thanks. No, it's been amazing. I'm truly grateful. And what I've learned is that I know nothing, you know, it's like I'm a student of life till the day I die. And I love learning. Like I've never been more obsessed with learning now than I ever have been. You know, the last 10 years of just like, I've, you know, gained more knowledge in the last 10 years than the, you know, the previous 28 and I'll be forever a student, you know. I love learning about everything, you know. I'm constantly, you know, trying to find new teachers, whether it's, you know, yoga teachers or, you know, chefs and, you know, nutrition experts and, you know, cannabinoid experts and doctors that are actually, you know, doing the right thing and, you know, psychotherapists and just whatever I can get my hands on, reading and just learning. So it's amazing. And you know, thank God for getting punched in the face for 8 years for a living. Because
well, you're affecting a lot of people's lives in a very positive way. Mine too. You know, I don't follow a lot of people on social media. I actually just made my profile public not that long ago. Because you know, sometimes it can be it's, you know, you can put out such a very positive message on social media, but at the same time, you know, I remember, you know, a few years back at all these followers and whatnot and stuff. And I'm like, if I'm going to have my life based on like how many people like my shit or followers, I could get it. Like, I don't care about that. But when you're trying to
that's put a hard one for people, that's a hard tough one.
Yeah. I mean, I always look at your stuff. I love it. I love it because I see the intention behind it. Like you're not doing it to be famous, you know?
Yeah, like no, not at all. I think that's the misuse of the tool, right? I mean, social media is a great tool. I think it was developed for the right reasons. Unfortunately, it's become so shallow and superficial. Now we don't even communicate, you know, the right way. And it really shows the shallowness in some people. You can look at some people's pages and it's like, you know, it's like, hey, me. It's about me. You know what I mean? Look at me. You see this like real hole in their, you know, in their being, you know, being superficial and very egocentric. But I mean, I try my best to use it the right way. And I have a love hate relationship with it. I mean, you can get swallowed up, you know, scrolling through it. And as an introvert, you know, putting myself out there was always a challenge for me. You know what I mean? Like getting comfortable enough to like speak the truth, like even though I wanted to and I felt like I had a lot of good things to say, you know, it put me out of my comfort zone. I think you got to get uncomfortable sometimes. And I'm still learning how to do it. I'm working on more content where I'm putting myself out there more with a little more strategy behind it. But yeah, I'm just trying to use it the right way, put out the right vibe, put out real truthful information. But selfless, you know, I mean, this is not about me. This is about, putting the truth out there to the world and hopefully people can, you know, at least see a little bit of it, you know, and maybe plant the seed is really what it's all about. Plant the seed somewhere down the road. They'll hopefully connect the dots and, you know, that's all I'm trying to
do. Absolutely. Well, you know, they say, Joseph Campbell said it, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasures that you seek, you know? Yeah. So it's, you know, moving beyond fear. And, you know, the minute you do that, it's like, you know, get busy being a little bit uncomfortable, then the uncomfortability becomes comforting. It's not, not such a bad deal if you just go through it. It's like not wanting to go to the gym, then you go there and then you feel good.
That's it, right? I know. So but, true. I learned that lesson with public speaking. I feared public speaking my whole life. I remember in high school and in school, I just hated it. It just made me uncomfortable. I just never, you know, never put enough effort into getting out of that comfort zone. And then when I retired and got into coaching, well, now, not that I was public speaking per se, I was speaking in front of a group of 23 guys, but when I started speaking publicly about cannabis and plant medicine and the whole bit, I was, you know, keynote speaking, you know what I mean? I still am, you know, and putting myself out there. But, you know, but the more I did it, the more, you know, it's like any skill, the more comfortable you get. But you break the shackles of that fear. All of a sudden it's like, now I'm realizing communication, whether it's, you know, digital communication or speaking, you know, in person, is one of my vehicles for the rest of my life. You know, but if I never challenge myself to become, say, a speaker, you know, those opportunities don't become unlocked. You know, just like exactly the quote you said there is just like it's so powerful, it's so true. I would say face your fears. It's like the sooner you do get over them, the opportunity lies on the other side of them. It's just like 100%, it's amazing how it works.
100%, yeah. Bang on. You've committed to a life of healing. Mental fitness and the integration of plant medicines in your recovery of post-concussion syndrome, PTSD, and substance abuse issues. Let's talk about these sensitive topics.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, you know, somewhat connected from what I've learned. And substance abuse is probably coming from a place of not being connected, you know, not understanding medicine, not understanding myself. And you know, so self-medicating with the wrong tools and, you know, depressants. I mean, you know, nervous system depressants, alcohol being the biggest one. And, you know, had a relationship with other party habits as well. You know, not sleeping properly. You know, not doing the simple fundamentals that we talked about. So I guess when I made the decision to retire, I was fully committed. It was like, okay, I'm all in. And plant medicine is one of them, yes. But most of these tools are just land up being right between the ears, like, you know, inside you. So I just kept fully committed to healing. And, you know, again, being punched in the face several thousand times probably when it was all said and done. Obviously, I had an onus on healing my brain specifically. So that's when I really got into, you know, using CBD and some, you know, and psilocybin, you know, mindfully to really just maybe help repair the damage that I caused, but also, you know, the spiritual element, you know, was just like, you know, reconnection and humbling, you know, the humbling properties that psilocybin has on the ego. I just felt like I needed to do all this work. I think what's the saying, like, you know, fit to serve, you know, if, you know, fit for service. It's like, if I'm on an airplane and the plane's going down, you put your mask on first so you can save other people's lives. It's like, well, if I can't save myself, how can I really do anything for other people? So I was dead set on doing, you know, everything I possibly could to increase my personal overall wellness, physical, mental, and spiritual, emotional, I mean, the whole package. And, you know, naturally, yeah, you know, people see it, you know, people see it, they see what I'm doing. And they're curious, right? So then now I'm in a position where I feel like, yeah, I am able to help other people legitimately, not just like, you know, superficial online Instagram coach. You know, it's like, oh, it's just like find something to do and help people. It's like, well, I have the experience. I lived it. You know, I'm not just pulling the shit out of my ass. You know, I lived it, and I have the experience of actually transforming, and the experience using these, you know, plant-based healing modalities as well as these human fundamental healing modalities. So I have the package, and science validates all of it. You know what I mean? There's enough science to fill up, you know, the Titanic now with between breath work and nutrition and yoga and cannabis science and psilocybin science. I mean, it's all there if you look for it. You just have to be willing to look for it. So yeah, man, it's just the, you know, the darkness, you know, put me in a, you know, cornered me, you know, I had to make a decision.
The darkness took you to the light.
It does. And so now it was just all about working on myself and getting myself a place where I needed to be, feel comfortable enough to put myself out there. And I did that. And I felt like I did that several years ago, but it's constant work. I'm constantly growing. As we all know, we're all constantly growing, and or we're growing or we're dying, I guess, you know, so, but I've chose to grow and live. So
yeah,
I'm just trying to exude, you know, life and energy, you know, in a positive fashion as much as I possibly can, and be the light, you know, be the change. I mean, Gandhi said it how many thousands of years ago. I mean, it's nothing new. It's not a new philosophy. I think every religious and spiritual text talk about it. And
be so the change you see in the world.
You have to be the change. You have to change. And, you know, and
that we that's radiate what I'm doing, that constantly. Which we are.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you're radiating pretty damn good right now, man. I'm so happy to, you know, actually be speaking to you like this. I feel like I'm actually talking to someone that, I feel like I'm talking to myself. God.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same way. Yeah. I know. Well, you know, your vibe attracts your tribe, right? I mean, it's we're vibrating on the same frequency. We're not just making small talk and talking about the weather. You know what I mean? We're talking about real talk. And, you know, I feel like I've known you for years, just based on us connecting.
Maybe we have.
Yeah, maybe we have. Maybe in a previous life somewhere. It's powerful stuff. You know, I don't have these conversations every day, and I wish I did more. And I do, but you know, I still have a lot of small talk conversation, and they serve their purpose. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound righteous, but I do appreciate connecting with people that have the same type of philosophies and have the same type of desire to live and help people along the way.
Yeah. I think it's at the end of the day, I it's all about service, man. You know, it is. And you know, even when you bring a lot of people, you know, they struggle financially these days. You know, they're having a go, and I always say, serve more, earn more.
Right.
You know, the more you serve, the more that'll just come. But no expectation. You know, just give with your heart, with an open heart. Don't expect anything. You know, and watch how it flows. You know, watch how the universe responds in kind.
Yeah.
So true. So, do you have any idea how many concussions you've had over the course of your life and how challenging it's been to actually overcome these post-concussion symptoms?
I don't have an exact number. I've been diagnosed with 3 in my professional hockey career and then 1 previous to that in youth hockey. So 4 actual diagnoses, but like learning about brain trauma now. And the spectrum of concussions, I guess anytime your head shakes, you know, and the brain rattles, there's some level of concussion, right? It's on the spectrum. So I guess every time you get punched in the head or get, you know, body checked, it's like on the spectrum. So I don't really have an answer to your question. It's definitely more than 4. I can assure you that.
4 diagnosed, probably 100 undiagnosed.
Yeah, right. No,
and probably ones that you had, then they shoved you right back out there on the ice to go fight somebody else too, I bet, a few times, eh?
Oh, yeah. I remember one definite concussion that I had that wasn't diagnosed was against Brashear when he pounded my ass. I got hemmed in the corner. I had nowhere to go. And it was, you know, this big fist coming at me and, you know, tagging me. And I, you know, usually you'd go back, but I was like, the boards are keeping me up. So I took a few extra punches, but I went after him later in the game. You know what I mean? And I had 2, you know, totally swollen black eyes from it. It beat my ass. Next morning.
Sounds like fun.
Oh yeah. When they start blowing my nose in the shower, my eye, I could feel like it was like an air balloon. My eye like swole shut from me blowing my nose, and I learned about 20 minutes later that I cracked sinus cavity. Jeez. I play the next night and try to fight again, but like, you know, there's no way in today's game that they would ever allow me to play. You know what I mean? I definitely had a concussion, but I mean, it just like, you just do what you can. I mean, it's a survival, right? I mean, even if I pulled myself out of lineup, someone's taking my job, and then it's like one of those types of deals. It's survival, right? I mean, as I get a paycheck, it was my livelihood. So
It shouldn't be survival. It should actually be thrival for all of us. There's enough resources in this whole entire universe to help everybody. But, you know, hopefully we'll get to that point maybe when this whole deal's over, that we can, you know, start sharing more and just being more compassionate to one another, and just, you know, community, unity, you know, and, you know, really just, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it's like you said, you know, there's, you know, a lot of people are dropping off. But at the end of the day, I think there's going to be a crack open of, you know, a real spiritual cleanse that is, I think, that is absolutely needed for a new earth, so to speak.
Yeah.
So you've embarked on a quest to use the sports platform to normalize and legitimize the use of all plant medicines and share your discoveries with the world. How's that been going for you as cannabis and psychedelics has now gone very mainstream?
Well, it's been pretty interesting, to say the least. You don't realize how powerful the sports platform is until you actually use it to make change and positive, real positive change. So, you know, they always say, like, you know, you have a duty as an athlete to give back. And, you know, I didn't really necessarily know what it meant in the past. Yeah, we did our hospital visits and you do some charity work and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden you realize the world we're living in and how banged up people are and how much they need help, So, you know, learning the science about, you know, around cannabis and psilocybin, I recognized that people put a lot of faith in their in athletes. It's like they almost have more faith in sports as guidance than the doctors themselves. If Tom Brady came out tomorrow and be like, guess what? I used cannabis and CBD and blah, blah, blah. It's like all of a sudden you'd have this like huge influx of people using cannabis only because Tom Brady said it. So I recognize that I'm not Tom Brady and I'm close. But nonetheless, I had a story. I played professional sports and I had, you know, buried myself into the ground. I recognized storytelling was a really powerful way to make a positive change. And, you know, especially when you're pairing storytelling and experience with science, which I landed up doing in my speaking engagements, very powerful. So I recognized that the sports platform was my vehicle to share the truth, you know, and other people have other vehicles. I mean, it would be foolish of me not to use the sports platform, but destigmatize. There's still a stigma around it, you know, but I feel like if athletes can use it, then the common man could be like, oh, well, the athletes are using that. You know, if it's always about performance, then we could probably use these too. So again, it's just, I say, taking advantage of my experience and my storyline and my life in sports and using it to as a foundation to propel my message. So it's been pretty impactful. Yeah.
Pretty great, man. So you're an advisor and psychedelic integration coach for a psilocybin-assisted clinical immersion company called Wake Clinics. Let's hear all about that.
Yeah, really interesting stuff they got going on. This is in Jamaica, one of the largest psilocybin cultivation facilities on the planet, as well as some other functional mushrooms. And they do clinical immersions there, where it's clinical immersions, be like in a real safe container, guided by either shaman or a actual true guide. And there's psilocybin and sound ceremony. So you talk about the power of sound as a healer, music, sound on its own, paired with psilocybin, pretty powerful experience. So when you go to one of these retreats or clinical immersions, they're lined up being two to three immersions, depending on how long you stay, but it all is integrated with the concept of integration. So you don't just go there to eat some mushrooms, have a powerful spiritual journey, and then hop on a plane and go back home. No, it's all about living and taking care of yourself, self-care. So all the things we talked about today, you know, there's yoga, there's breath work, there's nutritional healing, there's, you know, meditation, being open, communication, all these different fundamentals you take home. So obviously COVID threw a wrench in the retreats because of international travel there. Hope to be resuming soon. So the integration component for me is, you know, again, it's whether it's there in the moment in Jamaica, helping these guys conduct integration circles, or after the fact. I mean, once you leave, you know, the retreat location, integration is forever, right? I mean, integration is nothing more than all the pieces we've talked about today. So it's integrating those in back into your life. It's being more patient. It's being more forgiving. It's more self-care. It's increasing your nutrition and, you know, all these tools of mindfulness. So, interesting stuff going on. There's no question. And, you know, the psychedelic space, specifically psilocybin, has really, really grabbed some major momentum throughout COVID, the whole bit, where there's publicly traded companies now.
And it's unbelievable.
Unfortunately, it's probably becoming more, you know, industrialized than you'd hope this quickly. But nonetheless, the fact that, you know, the FDA's fast-tracked, synthesized psilocybin as a breakthrough therapy, you know, there's a lot of positive movement in this space. But to me, you know, the true natural occurring mushrooms guided by proper trained professionals in association with psychotherapists in a safe container is the way to go. True respect, and, you know, and true appreciation for these powerful, you know, fungal medicines, I mean, is what they are. And happy to be part of a progressive company. They're really, really engaging in the science component. They're, you know, the studies, they've actively started, I think, three clinical studies with West Indies universities in Jamaica, microdosing one on anxiety, microdosing one, I want to say, for depression, and a couple other ones that they're assembling along the way. Just it's so diverse, right? Psilocybin is not for one specific thing. We talk about mental health, talk about brain health. There's so many pieces to heal. So they're doing amazing work, and I couldn't be happier to be a part of it and help where I can. You know, I'm really kind of helping out the athlete division.
Yeah. I know when I take the neural blend, I can actually feel my brain creating new synapses and neurons and whatnot. Yeah. I can actually feel the integration of like the right brain, left brain actually like integrating together. It's quite something. I'll just sometimes bodily, I'll feel it a little bit because I know we carry neurotransmitters in our gut as well. It's like the old saying goes, you got to feel it to heal it, right? I'd really like to hear about your company that focuses on healing, Body Check Wellness. Following that, and I just love what you're doing with it. I know I've heard from a few other people, it's just an amazing product. So maybe you can tell us a little about that.
Sure. Yeah. Body Check Wellness is a hemp-derived CBD and functional mushroom company. And we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves into either of those, but that's mainly what we're into right now is hemp-derived CBD and functional mushrooms as recovery tools as well as performance tools and immunity boosting tools, right? Right. I mean, it's always about the immune system and the brain health and inflammation. So cannabinoids, as we've learned, are anti-inflammatory, specifically CBD high anti-inflammatory. Also neuroprotectant, antioxidant. That being said, as just an addition to your daily regimen as a daily essential, like a multivitamin as a precautionary, proactive tool, or as a reactionary tool if we're dealing with something we need to manage, whether it's a sleep issue or inflammation issue we already have, anxiety issue. So tools to help with that. Cannabinoids have an amazing ability to help with those pieces of the recovery process. And then the functional mushrooms are also, taboo in a sense, or, misunderstood. As you mentioned, lion's mane is known for the brain. These are functional mushrooms that help with brain and mental health issues, as well as immune system boosting issues, energy, sustainable energy. So we've combined them and together in products, and we also sell them separately. So if you're interested in the mushrooms, you can get mushroom products, adaptogens. Mushrooms are adaptogens, they're prebiotics, and what that means is the adaptogen component means that it works in align with stress responses, your body's natural ability to manage stress. So if we're able to manage our stress a little better, these adaptogens end up working better, and they help with focus and clarity and the whole bit. And then a couple of our products have other adaptogens like ashwagandha or maca root, which, help with, say stamina and energy, and ashwagandha is more of a mood regulator, but they're again, adaptogens working with mushrooms, working with stress responses. So again, a lot of education around all these things. I know it sounds like foreign language for a lot of people. People can hardly even wrap their head around just CBD. And we're mainly focused on full spectrum CBD. We're coming up with a broad spectrum line only to kind of appease the marketplace. But, THC is a valuable molecule as a cannabinoid. Body Check Wellness is, we're a wellness company. Obviously, we want to be truthful that, healing starts with ourselves, and these are just tools to help assist the healing process, and they work wonders for a lot of people. But if we're just going to, lean on CBD or functional mushrooms, we're not going to do the work. Well, we're kind of missing the point. We always educate around the integration component, because again, that's what it comes down to always, is doing the work, the integration, the self-care, self-love. And these are tools, sustainable, powerful tools. But, the idea is to eventually come to a point where maybe we don't need them. Exactly. I think that's the part of life, is we have that ability to heal. So
get there until you don't have to be there anymore. And then you can just function, without, and just
the way we're supposed to, the way we were created, we really shouldn't have to take any of this kind of stuff. It's what, you know, society and the hierarchies above has been, you know, been putting in our food and all kinds of stuff. It's just like, I think the most two important classes in school should be nutrition and PE. I hate to say it, you know, actually, I know I don't hate to say it, but the, you know, it all comes down to, you know, our well-being. You, I mean, you can't function well with, you know, when you're all blocked off, you know, not eating the proper stuff. And we talked about that, but so you're a co-founder of Athletes for Care, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that helps people to find safe, non-toxic ways to manage physical and emotional pain, as well as other mental health issues, while guiding them to understand a world of self-healing. Let's hear about that.
So it's basically this whole conversation in a nutshell. It's
We already heard all about it.
It was four or five athletes kind of came together. We ended up meeting on the cannabis circuit, speaking at conferences, at least these different panel formats, and we recognized like how much of an issue there was with guys retiring, with guys with substance abuse issues, concussion issues after they retire, lack of purpose, lack of opportunity. But starting with the medicine, it started with really the cannabis medicine as an amazing, you know, alternative for an opioid or Ambien or a muscle relax or any of these things, you know, to kind of educate the guys around, you know, just sustainable healing modalities. Obviously it's evolved much, much greater than that, because as we know, cannabis is just one of many tools that needs to be integrated. So it ends up being, you know, here are the tools. We actually just recorded a virtual conference, a whole plant expo put on by the American Journal of Endocannabinoid Medicine, but it was all plant medicines. We talked about cannabis and psilocybin. So our first ever, you know, as an organization panel dedicated to psilocybin as well. So the concept really of Athletes for Care is to help not just athletes. It's using the, you know, helping them, yes, but using the athletes or the athlete platform to help the common man, you know.
Yeah, that's incredible. What a blessing to actually have that platform to be able to use, to be able to help other people and be selfless. I mean, that's just, mad respected for that. That's awesome. Yeah. You've also been an advocate for multiple sclerosis. What was your why behind that cause?
My sister was diagnosed with MS. Geez, how many years ago now? I guess it's probably close to 20, maybe 18 or 19 years ago. And as I started to like learn about the human body and human condition and autoimmune disease, inflammation, all these things, I started to understand more of these disease states a little bit more. And then, you know, specifically MS, I just try to help, you know, help lend my knowledge and experience within, in my world, and understanding of health and wellness and detox and the whole bit to my sister, and lend the information. Cannabis, my sister has been using medical cannabis in Canada for, I say, upwards of 10 years now.
Is she in Winnipeg still?
In Winnipeg, yeah. And Winnipeg, yeah. Nutritional healing, you know, removing toxicity and whatever, all the fundamentals that we kind of talked about here today. So, you know, I'm an advocate for just healing, right? It just happens to be a specific disease state we're talking about here. And I would never done any work in the MS space if she hadn't had it. But when you kind of like break down disease states, and, you know, they're obviously all different to some degree, but there's a lot of things that are the same. You know, when you talk about inflammation, there's always inflammation around all these disease states. And there's a lot of, you know, gut health issues that are related to all these disease states. So, you know, whether I'm treating or not treating, but helping someone treat, you know, MS or, you know, cancer or diabetes, it's like a lot of the same pillars are in play, right? I mean, we're trying to detox, we're trying to remove poison, we're trying to remove the inflammatory response, we're trying to, you know, we're trying to incorporate more anti-inflammatory foods and supplements, and the formula ends up being the same. But you know, for the most part, actually, I don't want to, you know, come across you know, uneducated around it, but you know, But
you are. MS
diagnosis, yeah, right. Yeah, the MS diagnosis really kind of propelled me into this world of of understanding disease states outside of like the stuff that I was dealing with, you know, real true disease states is in the sense of like, you know, putting names on conditions, right? I mean, that our physical body has now manifested itself into some way, shape, or form. So it's been interesting because I'm learning a lot. I'm still learning a lot about these disease states and specifically MS and how, you know, how it affects, you know, just basic functions, you know, functional movements and, you know, and memory and stuff like that. Right. So staying on top of it, right? Whether you're diagnosed with something or not, you have to stay on top of a wellness, you know, it's like, it's forever. So even if you don't have an actual diagnosed disease, you have to live like you did in a sense where it's like, we have to constantly heal. We have to constantly heal. So not once in the last 10 years, I wake up and take life for granted, right? It's like, stay on top of it. And even if tomorrow I had a symptom and I went to see a doctor, a naturopath, and he said, well, you're dealing with this. Well, I feel like now I just got to be a little more regimented towards treating that specific ailment. But my, you know, my lifestyle isn't going to change a whole lot. You know what I mean? Because I think I've come to a point where I've removed the poison and now, you know, I mean, I'm adding all the nutrients and all the pieces that, you know, promote life. And
then you can actually feel the gift of life. You know, it's, as far as we know, we're here, you know, for one go around, we might as well, you know, enjoy the gift, you know, every day we wake up and open our eyes is an opportunity, you know, it's, you know, what are you going to make of it? Right. So, and if I'm correct, you're in the process of building out a hemp processing facility and soil to oil curriculum with PA State University called Advanced Alchemy Labs, if I'm correct. That's exciting. Can you educate the people and obviously the world on this project?
Sure. Yeah. That sounds exciting, man. COVID threw a massive wrench in this play, but nonetheless, it's still moving forward. But right before COVID, before the lockdowns of COVID happened, we signed an LOI with a state university, Cheyne University. It's the oldest historically Black university in the U.S.
Okay.
In Pennsylvania. And the idea was to lease one of their existing buildings out to build out an extraction facility, a cannabinoid extraction facility and lab, for a revenue share business opportunity that Body Check would be tied into, somewhere down, you know, as a separate entity, but tied into, but also to help build out a soil to oil curriculum with the school. So the students could actually enroll into this university and learn about, you know, cultivating hemp plants and soil and harvesting and processing and marketing and the kind of like basically the whole process to, you know, to bottling and then again, marketing. We're with COVID and the wrench thrown in the state, we're actually going to inherit a state grant and state funds had to be allocated different places, obviously with the economy being in the tank and a lot of this like Black Lives Matter stuff that happened. There was just a delegation of funds that landed up going other places besides ourselves. But here we are 6 months later and patching this project back together and building back up. But, you know, shit happens, you know, we could never have predicted COVID. It's one of those, bounces in life. You just got to like figure out a way to understand and move
adapt,
on.
Adapt, modify.
Yeah, right. So we're kind of at the beginning stage of the project where when I wrote this bio 6 months ago, when I started, you know, was doing a few things, this advanced alchemy was like right in the beginning stages of moving forward. And then I feel like we're in the exact same spot, but there is movement. We've had at least one phone call a week with the president of the university and a couple other government officials in the last month. So we're back to where we need to be now. It's just the building it out.
That's great. I wish you all the success with that. Just, you know, appreciate obviously it. That's for the world, right? It's not just for, it's not right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Part of it is on many levels, a few dimensions there can be pretty impactful. So
definitely. Well, if there's one profound message you can give to the world in these times of drastic change, what would it be, my man?
Wow. It's look inwards. And believe in yourself. Believe in yourself that you already have the tools to take that next level. Because I think there's a lot of self-doubt, you know, that kills a lot of dreams. and a lot of that self-doubt, and not looking outside of yourself leads to leaning on tools outside of yourself that are unsustainable. They're either will poison you, or if they break down, they won't be there for you. And then you'll be standing there, confused and wondering what's going on. So everything lies within you. You got to believe in yourself, and then, all the things we talked about today, tackling fears and start doing the inner work every single day. I mean, it's every single day. I mean, like Jim Rohn says, work harder on yourself than you do your job. It's hard for a lot of people to wrap their head around. It doesn't mean like physical work. We're so trained to think about what work is. And it's just like, well, work is breathing. Work is also meditating. Simple, like really low impact things.
Work smarter, not harder.
Work smarter.
And the astonishing power of belief.
It's amazing when you start believing in that philosophy.
All right, my man. Just want to say thanks, Riles, and keep spreading the love, brother. And how can our audience follow you throughout your journey on all social media platforms? Obviously, you're on Instagram, and you have two pages, obviously, your Body Check Wellness and your own personal. So maybe you can fire that out to the masses.
Yeah,
then we'll wrap her up.
Sure. Yeah. Instagram at Riley Cote 32, Body Check Wellness for the Hemp Thrive CBD Functional Mushroom Company. And check is spelled C-H-E-K. So Body Check Wellness. I'm on Twitter at Riley Coyote. So R-I-L-E-E-C-O-Y-O-T-E. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. But I think the Instagram.
You're all over the map.
All over the map. Exactly. And
is there anything you haven't done or what? Come on.
I've tried TikTok for about a week and I just couldn't get into it. There's been a couple of failures for me. I just between email, text message, phone calls, social media, I mean my bandwidth is exhausted. So trying to do the best with what I got, and I'm just trying to put the good word out there. So reach out if you guys have any questions or collaboration ideas. I'm open to
absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot we can discuss in the future. There's lots of opportunities. Absolutely.
Sure, let's talk about it.
For sure. All right. So I guess we're Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, man, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on. And
thank you so much. And we'll be in touch in the next little bit here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Anyways, thanks, man. That was great.